Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:05 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 20th, and we've had a pretty extraordinary condition in here today. The front month of West Texas Intermediate is trading at a negative value of -$33. It got down to -$40 at one point about half an hour ago, and this contract is going to expire tomorrow. So there is a very acute intention of people to get out of contracts. There are still 108,000 contracts outstanding. So either those people are taking delivery or they are rushing to get out of those contracts and to roll them into either June or July contracts. If they're rolling at these kinds of spreads, then the pickup is going to be incredible. Because the difference between the front and second month is $50. And that's really rather incredible relative to the fact that the price back at the beginning of April was closer to $50. So this is going to put extraordinary pressure on the traders who need to get out of these contracts. There's going to be massive margin calls as a result of this move. It is going to put extraordinary pressure on the smaller producers. They're not going to be able to make money at these levels. And then, of course, we're going to get a really incredible spike in the front month contract tomorrow, because when we roll into the second month, then it's going to be around the $20 level, so that's a significant issue. Now, when we then think about what else is going on in the energy sector, well, I think it's particularly interesting that a number of the larger producers were not in positive territory today, but they certainly weren't down a lot. That was true of Exxon. It was also true of Chevron. Of course, both Exxon and Royal Dutch Shell are majority natural gas producers. And in fact, natural gas prices were in positive territory today and have now rallied enough to break the sequence of lower rally highs over the course of the last 6 months. So there is also, I think it's worth pointing out, that natural gas prices are very cyclical. And we generally get lows in the price around May. And we are moving now into the May contract. So there is the potential then that we do tend to get somewhat higher prices in the summer period because of demand for air conditioning. And of course, because everyone is at home at the moment, then demand for air conditioning should be increasing. So that's a potential outcome as well. Now, if we stick within the energy sector, uranium prices have also been trending higher in here. And in fact, uranium is the best performing commodity this year. It really does help to nail down the clear point that because of restrictions on transportation and then restrictions on the mining capacity because of lockdowns from the coronavirus, there are shortages of storage capacity in the case of oil and mining capacity for a number of vital commodities. So uranium is benefiting from that right now. But of course, it's not like there's really a massive dearth of uranium out there. It's much more that simply this is a short-term supply inelasticity argument. Now, when we then think about how are some of those uranium miners doing, well, Cameco, for example, has now posted a failed downside break below $10 and has broken the year-long sequence of lower rally highs. Denison Mines, which is a much smaller operation, has now also broken a more than year-long sequence of lower rally highs and is back above its trend mean. When we then think about some of the other industrial resources, well, nickel prices had been by far the best performing industrial metal into the middle of 2019 and then gave up more than the entire advance, but it's also bouncing in here and is now testing that sequence of lower rally highs, and it was up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today. So that's rather encouraging. When we think about the copper price, it's also been rallying and unwinding the short-term oversold condition, but it is now a little bit overbought in the short term. I think that that is a condition we see in stock markets as well, that we've had very acute pullbacks, now we've seen significant bounces. And the question now is, are the lows going to hold during any period of consolidation? Then that remains an outstanding question. If I simply remain within the commodity sector, wheat prices were also in positive territory in here today, up 13 cents. There has been a mild upward bias to trading over the course of the last 4 years, but it has not been able to sustain a move back above the 600 cent level. But this kind of rounding characteristic that we have to the 6-year base formation is not all that dissimilar to the shape of the base formation we had in gold. If we just simply take the breakout away, then it really doesn't look all that different. And then we had a very substantial breakout. So I do think that when we think about where there are supply shortages, then these base formations, particularly when we have sequences of higher reaction lows within the base, they're generally suggestive of accumulation underway. Then coffee prices have also been firming over the course of the last while. Now, they have been subject to a great deal of volatility, and they were in negative territory in here today. But we can also conclude that there is a sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last year, and a rounding characteristic over the course of the last 2.5 years. Well, that suggests that, generally speaking, the dollar level has been holding, and there is the potential here that we're going to see more recovery as commodity prices generally do tend to firm. So when we look at the continuous commodity index, it was in negative territory today because it was dragged lower by the oil price. But that is unlikely to persist tomorrow, as that contract is going to roll. Now, if we look at what's been going on in the gold market, then I think it's important to just look at the difference in the spread between the spot value in London and the COMEX contract. At one point last week, the spread got up to almost $70, and it's down now to about 15 to 16. What I find particularly interesting is that the shape of the chart is very similar to what we had in the dollar index. We had the big decline in February, a big pop back on the upside in March, and then some moderation in terms of the demand over the course of the last month. So there is an incredible amount of speculation as to exactly what is going on. Everything from the refiners shutting down, from the various mints no longer producing gold coins, to liquidity conditions because people are not at their desks, to the concerns among about counterparty risk between different European banks. But this commonality that we have with the dollar, I think, is much more important, because what it really does suggest is that during the big sell-off in March, we had an acute shortage of gold in the physical market that translated into demand for futures, and the futures demand shoved up the spread between spot in London and COMEX futures traded contracts in New York. And now that that is starting to ameliorate, there is less pressure on the system, and not least because people are attempting to close the arbitrage by literally taking delivery of physical and flying it to the USA. But it does help to, I think, just ram home the point that we have had an incredible period of illiquidity in a range of different markets, and that is something that is still with us. So when we then think about what exactly is going on in terms of the stock market, then I think we can see, for example, that the S&P 500 has unwound about half of the decline. It was in negative territory in here today because of the worry about the negative impact of this incredible decline in the oil market. But a short-term overbought condition has replaced a short-term oversold condition. We are due a consolidation. It is, I think, anyone who thinks that the market is going to go straight back up and onto new high ground is really it's wishful thinking. There has been a lot of damage done to the consistency of the trend, and it is really quite likely that we're going to get some consolidation, and not least because investors just don't know what when the lockdowns are going to end and how successfully they will end and how economic activity is going to rebound once those lockdowns have ended. We've heard from a number of companies that they will not be opening up as many locations following the lockdowns as were opened before them, and some of those are major employers. When we hear from companies like Best Buy that they're not going to be opening up some of their stores, or that Disney has laid off 100,000 people, about half their workforce, these are the kinds of events that are going to be difficult. But what it also suggests is that we're just not going to get back to the same level of employment. But nonetheless, it is likely that we are going to get back to a strong employment or a much stronger employment situation than we do have today. Considering that unemployment right now is probably around 20%, it may just jump back to about 6 or 7% once the lockdowns end, but it's going to be probably a long time before we get down to 3 and 4% again. So then we have the fact that there are a substantial number of people that are going to be seeking forbearance, whether that is from their mortgage or their car loans or their credit card debt. And these are all, I think, rather important factors. One thing that I find particularly interesting is that Amazon has rallied really quite incredibly over the course of the last month, rallying about 50%. But it's looking overbought in the short term. It's due some consolidation. And their commitment to delivering on a 2-day window is been expanded now to anything from 4 days to a week. One thing that we've certainly noticed over the weekend is that the seller-fulfilled products rather than the Amazon-fulfilled products have been winning the buy box. And that is simply the algorithm in Amazon giving favoritism to the sellers to fulfill the orders faster than Amazon can. I think that's a clear indication of just how much stress the fulfillment centers are under. Then we have the fact that France has closed down Amazon's fulfillment centers because of the risk of spreading the coronavirus. So these are all, I think, factors that need to be considered when a share is up 50% in a month and is still trading at a valuation well in excess of $1 trillion. Everything has to go very right for a long time to justify that, and it's at an estimated PE of 87. Well, that says to me that there is clear potential for some consolidation at least. Even the Nasdaq, which has been a tower of strength, is looking somewhat overbought in the short term. Now, when we look at these trends over longer periods of time, the Nasdaq has been a clear outperformer and has clearly bounced from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It has plenty of room in which to consolidate and still be in a reasonably consistent advance, although I think that the size of the pullback, over the course of the last 2 and 3 months is enough to hold up the momentum on this market for what could potentially be a reasonably prolonged period of time. Now, if we look at some of the better performing shares outside of the very significant move we've had on Amazon, Microsoft is right back in the region of its peak and is also susceptible to some additional consolidation. Apple has bounced from the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range, but is also short-term overbought. Facebook had also bounced, but again, it is just about unwound, about half of its decline. And Google is in a pretty similar situation. It has unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean. It had bounced from the psychological $1,000 level, and this is the first area of potential resistance right now. So these are the best performing shares in the market, and they look susceptible to some consolidation. Then, when we think, for example, about what Europe looks like, well, the European indices have all bounced, and they have got some of the widest overextensions relative to their respective trend means. The size of their declines is completely out of character with what we saw on the S&P 500, but there are still a lot of shares that share these characteristics. And the commonality that we see right across Europe, whether that is the Euro Stoxx Index or the FTSE 100, or the DAX, they all share this incredible acceleration on the downside. It is, I think, simply too much to ask that they accelerate straight back up on the upside. There is just too much uncertainty to give that kind of move credence. There is also the clear fact that people have been rushing to buy the dip, and that is out of character with the kind of activity we would associate with a major market bottom. Usually, you have to be sick to the stomach to be right when you're buying the dip. That disappointment and the blood on the streets is usually an indication that people have taken significant losses and that their risk appetite has deteriorated. I think it is quite likely that we are going to get some pause of consolidation. The big question then is how well the lows are going to hold. I think the mistake that people are making when they compare the rebound that we've had recently with what we had in 2009 is that 2009 was a failed break below the low in 2008, around November of 2008. And then it popped back up and it never looked back. There was still a lot of people waiting for the second shoe to drop, but it never did. Because it was, in fact, the low put in March of 2009 was the second shoe dropping. We haven't had a retest of the low or anything approaching it over the course of this incredible rebound over the course of the last while. Therefore, I think the odds are that we're going to get at least some consolidation. I think would be a normal conclusion that we should anticipate that following such an incredible decline that we should at least get some consolidation where investors just take the time to draw breath and the speed with which we've seen markets move is certainly something that is deleterious to sentiment overall. Now, when we look at markets like Japan, then it had got right back up to test the 20,000 level, which is the lower side of the overhead range, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today. The second section index has been continuing to rebound, but the pace of the advance has been relatively modest compared to the pace of the decline, and it still needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean. We have seen, I think, some evidence of quite acute volatility in parts of the the Chinese market in here today, and particularly in the healthcare sector. Let me see if I can pull up that ticker. It's SH. And I'm just trying to pull that up. There we go. We had mispricing come through in the market in here. It at one point was at 10,000, pulled back by 20% and closed pretty much unchanged on the day. I clicked through a number of shares in here today and I couldn't find the share that had had the big decline and subsequent rebound. And of course, the healthcare sector has been a tower of strength relative to the wider market over the course of the last while. The problem for investors is that it is so heavily manipulated that it's very difficult to figure out where value in fact resides. One thing we certainly know is that the number of troubled regional governments is increasing, and we could be on the cusp of seeing a number default over the course of the next while. One thing is certain, though, is that the Chinese government is finally starting to become alert to the fact that they have been too slow to provide stimulus and that they are providing additional stimulus. And that pretty much rounds out the fact that every government in the world is now producing stimulus. And the quantity of money that is being printed is highly supportive of the view that we've probably seen lows of at least near-term, potentially medium-term significance in the majority of stock markets. The proof of that will be when we see successful retests of the lows. And we are just not there just yet. Government bond yields remain really quite steady, but certainly not rising in the short term. Obviously, when we look at governments and the quantity of money that they're printing, there is nobody talking about paying back the money right now. The chorus that is coming out of just about every government is that this is not the time to think about deficits. But the reality is that deficits are very real. Nobody seems to have any plan on how to pay them back. And that is likely to be inflationary over the medium term. But over the short term, deflation is still reigning. The fact that you have oil prices falling so aggressively and the fact that unemployment levels are rising, well, all of those are deflationary forces which are keeping a lid on the government bond yields. It's generally once we get past this period when economic growth starts to rise again and the monetary accommodation remains in the system for longer, that's probably when inflationary pressures will start to rise. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.